This is the Annie Fry Show.
Well, I think if you repeatedly say someone is going to be the next Adolf Hitler, the next Mussolini, American dictator, there's been publications that have actually put out front page stories that have to depict Trump looking like Hitler. If you do these sorts of things, you eventually have to conclude that the overwhelming majority of people that see that are going to say, we better vote against this guy. But there are enough lunatics and nut jobs out there who are going to take the next step and say, well, this guy is truly evil. If this guy is truly dangerous, if our democracy and our system of government is going to be wiped out if this guy wins, I need to take this guy out. And again, we need to learn more about this individual. We need to learn how he got there, how he, without perimeter, wasn't secured, who he was, and what was behind it. But I think we know enough about some of the things he's posted to say that he clearly was influenced in some way by this rhetoric about Trump being this dangerous dictator in waiting.
Well, we've heard a lot about that from various commentators, that rhetoric. And for some people, they're saying, you know, you listen to people say threat to democracy over and over and over again, and you can kind of see where this is headed. But then you listen to other people and they're saying Donald Trump needs to tone down his rhetoric. That's why this is happening to him. That and a host of other issues we'd like to get to here with our friend Jim Carafano joins us once again, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here. Is he there? We need to. Okay, let's just, we'll wait and see if we can get him back on the air here. I know that we're in a new studio for the day, and so we are working right now on making sure that we can get everything online as it is supposed to be. You know, Brad, or Ryan, I should say, when I think about the push for from the left to get the rhetoric in order, knowing that everybody is participating in this equally, I don't really feel like the right is not saying things that are elevated. Oh, wait, we got him. Jim, are you there? Sorry. Are you with us, Jim? Jim Carafano, can you hear us? I hear you. All right. I want to go ahead and let's put him on hold and see if we can get this working right. We've got a new studio that we are working with, and I want to make sure that we can get to him and make sure that he knows he's on air when we put him on air. Do you feel like the right needs to participate, Ryan, in toned down rhetoric? Because right now it's kind of a you go first thing.
A little bit. You know, I think that we should probably all take a step back and say that saying that the democracy is going to end needs proof. And the trouble is that if you look at evidence of people doing things that are going to really upend our system, I saw Donald Trump in office for 4 years. I didn't see really anything he did that was upending the system, other than the fact that he liked to use executive orders. But guess who else did that? Barack Obama did that. George W. Bush did that. Every president recently has been doing that a lot more than I would be comfortable with. So I don't love that. But that's not a Republican thing. That is both sides doing more and more executive orders. What I see is Democrats doing things that would completely upend the system and then saying that the other side's doing it. Case in point, putting more justices on the Supreme Court. Now, would they be breaking laws by doing that? No, but the system has been for hundreds of years now that you have 9 justices on the Supreme Court. They want to do court packing. That would change the system. Adding states that only have Democrat senators, that would change the system. Changing the way we vote, changing federal election laws to be much more loose, that you could not trace really anybody trying to vote. You know, they want to do that at the state level. They almost did it at the federal level under Joe Biden in the first 2 years of his term. So when you look at the evidence for who's trying to kind of upend everything that we know, that's who's doing it.
Yeah. And it does get heightened on both sides. But at this point, who's being shot at? Yeah, Scott Jennings on CNN.
It's on both sides. It's coming from the right. The rhetoric, it's coming from the left.
The rhetoric. They have tried to kill this man twice. OK, he got shot in the ear. And this guy was sitting up shop outside of a golf course to try to kill him this weekend. And I know after something like this happens, it's very fashionable to, you know, talk about rhetoric on both sides. Donald Trump is the target. Okay, he's the current target, and it's happening, and it's happened again. And I just, honestly, we have to have a conversation about elections. If you lose an election, the country's not going to come to an end, okay? What I want Democrats to do, honestly, is to say, it's okay. Like, if Donald Trump wins, democracy will not end. The Constitution will not end. We're not going to live in a dictatorship. There will not be a bloodbath. All the things they say that are totally fabricated to me, it would be a good day to stop doing that.
So I think he's spot on. I think Scott Jennings sitting there saying that that the world doesn't end if your candidate loses is an important thing for people to hear. He had more to say on CNN.
Everybody's talking today about all the rhetoric in this country and what are we going to do to fix it going forward. Folks, it's too late. It's too late, in my opinion, because all the rhetoric about Donald Trump over the last several years, that he's a threat to democracy, that the country will come to an end if he gets elected president again. You know, even over the weekend, we have people blaming him and J.D. Vance for a bomb threat in Springfield. Well, if you have believed that over the weekend, then how can you not believe that the rhetoric leading up to today is not somehow responsible for the fact that this man has now survived two assassination attempts?
So when you listen to Scott Jennings talk about those bomb threats in Ohio, so people, that's been put on the Trump administration, or not administration, campaign, on Trump and Vance multiple times. CNN's own Dana Bash.
Nobody is disputing that the town of Springfield, Ohio, needs help. But you're not just a bystander. You're the senator from Ohio. So instead of saying things that are wrong and actually causing the hospitals, the schools, the government buildings to be evacuated because of bomb threats, because of the cats and dogs thing, why not actually be constructive in helping to better integrate them into the community?
So, I mean, Ryan, Dana Bash, like, there's no shame here. And this is somebody who has, A, moderated a presidential debate, B, had the only national sit-down conversation with the opponent. See, she's sitting here putting this on the Trump Vance ticket as if this is 100% their problem. I'm going to play Governor DeWine's comments here in a second, but I mean,
it just cracks me up because when you listen to the media blame J.D. Vance for raising the rhetoric, you're the media. You are the ones in control of the message and raising the rhetoric. You're the same network that's running all this stuff about threats to democracy. And yet, it makes me wonder, bigger picture, you know, where do we go from here? This has gotten so intense, the rhetoric from the left, because you're talking about this one little issue Dana Bash is, but the rhetoric from the left has gotten so heightened that it makes me wonder in 2028, regardless of who's president or who has been president, how do you wrap this up? How do you go higher than that?
I don't know, but it's important that we do. We're going to try again with our friend, our very patient Jim Carafano, with the Heritage Foundation. Jim, can you hear us? I hope you can.
I can.
Thank you for your patience. We're in a separate studio.
All the way
studio.
In Budapest.
Budapest, man. Well, we went down the hall and we're panicking. You're in Budapest. I want to get your thoughts on the second attempt on Donald Trump's life. This guy who is like fighting for Ukraine in Ukraine, photos with Zelensky, unless they're AI photos. I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, this guy's a total grifter, right? He has nothing to do with Ukrainians. The Ukrainians want nothing to do with them. That's a dead end of the story. I mean, the guy's an obvious wacko. So two things. One is, these are the kinds of attacks the Secret Service are designed to stop. It's not, you know, Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible or Carlos the Jackal. It's a Yahoo with a gun that can get close to the president and shoot him. So they have failed against exactly the kind of plots. And for somebody to get within 100 yards, you know, several hundred yards of the president within shooting distance, that's a failure. It doesn't matter if they pull a trigger or not. It's a complete failure. So we have clear operational failures here, now twice. So that says to me that there are serious failures in how the Secret Service functions. And I got to tell you, look, I remember that this is a new thing, right? I was there in the Trump years. I saw security at a presidential event. You know, we had Secret Service come to Heritage, and we have high profile foreign visitors. This is not the way the Secret Service is supposed to. That's a failure. So that I can tell just by Heritage had a recent event on this. We brought in some experts that looked at this. But that is not up for question. These are operational failures, which the Secret Service is literally not functioning correctly. Here's the thing I don't know, and which if somebody says, this turns out to be true, I believe them, that the that this administration doesn't care about protecting Donald Trump. That if anybody said, actually, you know, I don't think we're providing enough protection to Trump, that somebody would say, what are you want to get fired? You know, So there is clearly a failure in operational practice in what they do in the leadership of the Secret Service. What I can't tell you is the president of the United States and the Secretary of Homeland Security simply indifferent to the security and protection of the former president of the United States? You can convince me the answer is yes.
So just to be clear, who's the buck stopper on providing Donald Trump the security to make sure that his life is secure?
The president of the United States, the Secretary of Homeland Security reports to him. The Secret Service reports to the Secretary of Homeland Security. So the guy that created the open border that lets 10 million illegal aliens come to this country, that's responsible for an unprecedented crime wave and turning the Border Patrol from the Border Patrol into a concierge service for illegal immigration, that's the person that's responsible for the functioning of the Secret Service. Same dude.
Man, well, I pray for Donald Trump right now because I don't really feel like this is over. It's just really scary. I want to shift gears, and I know we don't have you for much longer, and we appreciate your patience while we're trying to figure out a lot of tech stuff as we've switched studios here. The Fox News report about 9 people killed and thousands of others injured when handheld pagers exploded across Lebanon today, an apparent targeting of Hezbollah members. Can you comment right on this and tell us what's going on here, what you might know?
Well, look, the Israelis are sending every signal possible to Hezbollah saying, dude, back off. You really don't want to do this. Iran may want you to do this. Hamas may be pleading for you to open a second front. But trust me, you do not want to do this. Your country is not going to survive this well. You should think that you need to live another day. And if shooting down your drones and missiles and taking out your ammo supplies doesn't convince you, the fact that we've just demonstrated we can reach out and touch all the individual leadership in the entire network, including people in the Iranian regime who are working with Hezbollah, that should send you a message that maybe this is not the day. It's like if the Indians rode up to Custer and said, you know what, you don't really want to go to the Little Bighorn today. Maybe another day, but not today.
Hmm. Will they get the message? Is there a way to communicate to Hezbollah that will tell them to stand down?
If I knew that, I could have your job.
Well, I don't know much anything. I appreciate that, Jim. We appreciate you joining us from Budapest. You said that's pretty impressive as usual. Thank you for your patience with us and working with us to get you on today.
Well, only because you're the best voice in radio in the universe. That's the only reason.
You're the best voice, definitely in Budapest, for sure. Jim, we appreciate you. Thank you. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. All right. We successfully hung up on him.
The best voice in Budapest sounds like it might end up being the name of his memoir.
Yeah, 3 days in Budapest.
Yeah.
I'll write the foreword on it. Oh, man. All right. Well, we appreciate you being with us today. We are in a temporary studio. We're having fun with it. We've got some new updates coming to the current, the normal studio that we use. So we are pushing through, and I'm excited about our next guest. Andy McCarthy is going to be with us, and we're going to talk to him about the lawfare that has taken place, the absolute aggressive nature with which the justice system has pressed upon Donald Trump. And is it just Donald Trump? Is that all that they really are going after? I think the answer is no. And Andy McCarthy is going to break it down for us when we come back. Come say hi on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Give Brad some encouraging words. He's got a lot of things being thrown at him at once. He's doing a great job and he can use your encouragement. So come say hi and vote in today's YouTube live chat poll. Did Ryan Routh, that second shooter, the second assassin of Donald Trump's man, he's racking him up. Did he act on his own accord? Yes, he's a lone wolf, or no, he's a conspirator. Annie Fry YouTube channel, live chat poll, Annie McCarthy. Donald Trump.
Trump is an existential threat to our democracy.
He's a genuine danger to American security.
We are fighting for a democracy.
We have to preserve our democracy.
Every time I hear that clip and I hear Joe Biden's voice, it's jarring to me how weak his voice is. But that's a montage, a mini montage there, of the repeated threat to democracy that we continue to hear from those people who are trying to lead us or are leading us. And then, of course, there's all of the rhetoric that comes out of the media. They've really built a strong case just by legal system, legal challenges, lawfare against Donald Trump to try to back up the idea that he is a threat. But is that lawfare even an honest, realistic depiction of who Donald Trump is? Let's bring our next guest on. Excited to have Andy McCarthy back with us on The Andy Frey Show. He's the contributing editor at National Review. He is the host of The McCarthy Report. You also see him, of course, on Fox News as a Fox News contributor. Andy, thank you for being with us today. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Andy, it's my pleasure.
So, you know, there's been a second attempt on Donald Trump's life, and there's a lot of questions leading up to this individual who is doing this, you know, trying to figure out motives and everything. A lot of people are talking about rhetoric, and we hear the left regularly talking about the threat that Donald Trump is. And I think that the lawfare that's been thrown against him is certainly one of the things that they use to really prop up that idea. You've been at the forefront of covering this lawfare. Do you think that there's a factor in here that this has just been a political motivation to make people believe that he is a threat?
Well, I think that most of the rhetoric about rhetoric has been designed to intimidate people into not crossing lines that the left doesn't want crossed. So I think that Trump is the target in the sense that, he's the one who draws attention. And, you know, when they criticize what they call hot rhetoric, when he uses it, when they use it, it's, it's passion. But yeah. When he uses it, it's incitement. But I think the design of this, like the design of much of lawfare, where the process is more the penalty than the ultimate outcome of some of these cases, is to intimidate people into not exercising their rights. I prosecuted terrorists back in the 90s, including prosecuting the blind sheikh successfully for incitement. That was actual incitement, calling for violence, violent attacks on American military targets under circumstances where you were dealing with somebody who had demonstrated in the past the capacity to order acts of violence, that people would actually carry out his orders. That's incitement. And the reason I argue pretty hard that anything that stays on the right side of incitement is something that we should just indulge. It doesn't mean you have to like it. A lot of political language is pretty obnoxious, and historically it's been that way. But the alternative, if you let the government and let people with an agenda start to intimidate people into turning into taboos, what should actually be policy that we discuss openly, is that you have a much more dangerous society.
Andy McCarthy with us right now, Fox News contributor and contributing editor at National Review. I'm looking at this article that you have at National Review right now, and you're pointing out the fact that Donald Trump is far from the only target of Dems lawfare abuse. That's the headline for your article. And, you know, we, of course, talk quite a lot, of course, about Donald Trump. But the tentacles of this lawfare from this aggressive Justice Department, it has a far reach.
Yeah, it sure does. And I think that obviously Trump is the most prominent target of this, but he's far from the only target of it. And the difference between Trump and a lot of people who feel the lash of this is that Trump actually has not only the attention of the media and a high profile, he has a lot of resources to hire lawyers and investigators to help him to, you know, mount a defense, which has been a very successful defense in the last 2 years. But also because he's got the media profile, he can fight back and call what's going on in a way that the average person can't. I wrote over the weekend about a Republican poll watcher who, you know, made a remark about, you know, something that he had witnessed in a recount in Michigan in a close local race. He analogized it to treason, which, you know, may be an unfortunate analogy, but it certainly wasn't anything more than that. The guy was just blowing off steam. He didn't even make the remark to the person that he was talking about, who was in another room. And you had a progressive Democratic prosecutor in Michigan charge him with making a terrorist threat, which has a 20-year potential prison sentence. Now, I'm pretty confident, given what the law of Michigan is and the law of the United States, that that's a case that ought to get laughed out of court and probably will at some point. But I've seen what happened with Trump in Manhattan, where you had a progressive Democratic elected prosecutor and a progressive Democratic judge presiding, and Trump got convicted. And I think it'll ultimately be reversed, but it may take 2 or 3 years. Trump can afford that, yeah, but not everybody can. So what happens to this guy? You know, he's if he gets railroaded in the trial court, which could happen, I think he'll eventually win the case on appeal, but he'll have gone through God knows how much money in legal fees, the anxiety that you have when you're under criminal accusation, the lost employment opportunities. So this is why I say that the process is the penalty. You have one side of our political debate in this country which actually believes that it's the right thing to do to use the processes and administration and the administrative state in our country, all of these very elaborate processes, to use them in a punitive way that breaks their opposition and makes everybody else, you know, it's what this stands as is a sign to everyone else that, you know, this can happen to you too if you cross us.
Yeah, I think that's the really scary thing. We've heard President Trump say they're coming after him because they're trying to get to us, the American people, or at least those who don't think correctly, according to how the people who have the power believe that they should. I mean, is this justice bias, Andy McCarthy, in your opinion? Is it able to be politically influenced, or is it bureaucratically institutionalized, or both?
I think it's both. I think, you know, the history of the progressive movement in America, particularly as it's gotten, it's really in its ascendancy since Obama, and it's gotten much more aggressive, I would say, in the last 20 years. But I think the history of it always is that it gravitates to the place where it can make the biggest impact. So, for example, when you had conservative administrations in the 80s into the 90s, they pushed their agenda through the courts. When you had progressive Democrats in power, for example, in the Obama administration, they pushed their agenda through executive power. They're still pushing their agenda through executive power and the administrative state. So they always go to the weakest link in the chain and use that, you know, use the levers of power when they can acquire them to push their agenda up the field. The difference between now and, say, you know, the 1980s, 1990s, when I was a prosecutor in New York, I always draw this comparison. If you would run for Manhattan District Attorney or New York State Attorney General in the 80s or 90s, and you said, elect me and I will use the powers of the office against our political enemies, that would not only have been deemed a disqualifying argument, they would have run you up to Bellevue Hospital for a mental evaluation for making an argument like that. Flash forward to 2018, maybe 2017, Letitia James runs for attorney general in New York State and says, elect me and I will use the powers of the office to take on Donald Trump,
right,
and target him. And she got elected like 70% to 30%. So that's not just a legal problem. That says a lot about the culture, at least in these one-party blue states.
Andy McCarthy with us right now. I have just one question for you in your expertise, in your opinion. Is the solution, I mean, I feel like if we elect Donald Trump, a lot of the policies that I want to have enacted are going to much more likely to be enacted should he be put in office. But that executive has the ability to help fire people who need to be fired and try to reshape the Justice Department. And yes, I assume that you are putting your trust in the guy on the other side of the aisle to, you know, air quotes, do the right thing. Can Donald Trump or even Kamala Harris, for that matter, can they go in there and impact justice quickly with their abilities as the president of the United States?
Oh, absolutely. You know, look, I think one of the things we should be talking more about, Annie, is the Democrats, for all this talk about Donald Trump being the greatest threat to democracy, you know, the Democrats have controlled the executive branch, which is now the most powerful branch by far in government, for 12 out of the last 16 years. That means, you know, just to get an idea, we have about 800 plus federal judges in the United States. 540 of them have been appointed by Barack Obama and Joe Biden in 12 of the last 16 years. Trump got a lot, but he had a four-year term. He got 220. They had more than twice as many, and the next president will probably get another 200 plus. So, you know, it's one thing to talk about, you know, Trump and his policy preferences and, you know, the threat to democracy and all this stuff. But where the rubber meets the road, where a lot of these issues are being fought out, every single day, a Democratic administration is going to be appointing federal judges, federal administrators. They're going to be threading the Justice Department, the administrative state, all over the place with their operatives. And that's what moves policy in this country.
Yeah, there's so much consequence to what happens in November. And I think that a fair justice system is something that is desired on a bipartisan level. Andy McCarthy, thank you. We always love having you with us, and we appreciate your expertise on this issue.
Thanks so much, Annie.
We'll have you back soon. Andy McCarthy, a Fox News contributor. He's also the contributing editor at National Review. We always appreciate him coming on. He's on X at Andrew C. McCarthy. Go tell him hi. Tell him thanks for being on the show. If you like hearing him, I love it when he comes on. All right. I'm going to turn over the rest of the show to Ryan Wiggins. So he just found that out just now.
Okay. We're going to be talking about polls for the next hour and a half.
You know what? There is a contingent of people who is going to be locked and loaded, ready to go.
It's my people.
Yeah, we're in a separate studio today. We're here, of course, still at the radio station. We're in it's called Studio C. We're in the KMOX territory. We snuck in here. We got these microphones, and we're seeing how long they'll let us stay.
It's a pirate broadcast.
It's a pirate yar.
It's a pirate yar
broadcast. I don't know how you say the R, like a
burr.
it sounds like you're cold.
I think I'm gonna mark that and make us
that sounds like my stomach.
We're getting some upgrades in the 97.1 studio, so we've got several things that are, well, I would say pretty much everything is off from usual, but we're handling it, we're managing, we're excited to be here. And we've got more fun to talk about in the rest of the show. We'll also get back to that YouTube live chat poll. Not so fun. Did Ryan Rauth act on his own? Yes, he's a lone wolf. Or no, he was a conspirator. You go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and you can come see our new digs for the moment and vote in that poll. Leave a comment. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's been quite a fun 1 o'clock hour. Got to speak with Jim Carafano, also Andy McCarthy on the show to talk about the news of everything that's going on right now with the Trump assassination attempt, second time, as well as what is taking place with those blowing up pagers on members of Hezbollah. Really, really crazy stuff. In the meantime, we've seen Kamala Harris is taking questions at, correct me if I'm wrong here, gentlemen, but the National Association of Black Journalists.
Yeah, it's a panel.
Panel
in Philadelphia,
and they've been going for a while, but it seems like they're asking questions right now. So yep. We want to listen into the question and answers of what's going on right now. So,
Vice President, black men, as you know, are a closely watched voting bloc. You've hosted black men at your residence.
Yep.
You have engaged black men and centered them in your economic opportunity tour.
Mm-hmm.
But polling shows that some black men, particularly young black men, are considering voting for Donald Trump, and they see him as better for for the economy. What is your message to young black male voters who feel left out of this economy, and how can your economic policies materially change their lives?
So I appreciate the spirit of the question, but I'll tell you, I've often been asked this question in a way that I've had to respond by first saying that I think it's very important to not operate from the assumption that black men are in anybody's pocket. Black men are like any other voting group. You gotta earn their vote. So I'm working to earn the vote, not assuming I'm going to have it because I am black, but because the policies and the perspectives I have understands what we must do to recognize the needs of all communities. And I intend to be a president for all people. Specifically as it relates to what we need to do, to your point around economic opportunity, yes, I started way before I was at the top of the ticket and what I called an economic opportunity tour focused on black men. Understanding that, for example, we have so many entrepreneurs in the community who do not have access to capital, but they've got great ideas, an incredible work ethic, the ambition, the aspiration, the dream, but don't have the relationships necessarily. So my work has included, as vice president, getting billions more dollars into community banks, including working with the big banks to do that, so that we can increase access to capital for our small businesses, for our startups. Part of my plan under my economic opportunity plan going forward is that right now, startup entrepreneurs, small businesses only get a tax deduction of $5,000. Nobody can start a small business with $5,000. So I'm expanding that to $50,000. Understanding, again, that when people have the opportunity to have the resources to get started, they're going to put the good ideas, they're going to put the hard work into it. And part of what I also know is that our young black men, our black men, just like any group of people, anybody, our small businesses are really the backbone of our economy overall. And when they do better economically, we all do better. Part of my work is about understanding what we need to do in dealing with, for example, the historic inequities that have faced the black community around home ownership. Right, I don't have to go through the history with anybody here about what that has meant in terms of redlining, what that has meant in terms of biases and home appraisals, and what that the impact it has had on stemming the opportunity to build intergenerational wealth because of those obstacles. So part of the work that I have done and will continue to do is identify, speak truth about those obstacles, and address them. Another example is medical debt. 1 in 4 black families or individuals is more likely to carry medical debt than others. So part of my perspective, and as vice president, part of the work that we have done is to say that we're going to eliminate medical debt from being on your credit score. Because until now, medical debt worked against your credit score, and you know, people know their credit score like, you know, you wait, right? You know that number. And the difference between what that number is and what it needs to be is the difference between you being able to get a car loan, a small business loan, or even a lease in on an apartment. And so part of my approach is understanding the obstacles that traditionally and currently exist to allow anyone, including black men, be able to achieve economic wealth. And I'm gonna tell you, I don't think it is sufficient to just only talk about economic policy around reducing unemployment. It is an important marker, and I'm proud of the work that we've done thus far, but it should be a baseline there, everybody's working. The point is, do people have an opportunity to build wealth? If that's what they choose to do, if that's what they want to do. And a lot of my perspective as we go forward is just that. I believe that there are a lot of opportunities that are available to the American people if we see people and understand what they want for themselves and their families and then meet them where they are.
Wasn't the question that she was asked, why are some black voters supporting Trump?
Yeah, like, what are you going to do?
More or less.
Well, like, but why would black... Did they specify men? Why,
yeah, they did say men.
Why would black men support Donald Trump? And then her first response is that she doesn't look at black people like a monolith and she needs to work to earn their vote. I thought that's a pretty good precursor to a response. And to understand that Spirator, you go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and you can come see our new digs for the moment and vote in that poll. Leave a comment. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's been quite a fun 1 o'clock hour. Got to speak with Jim Carafano, also Andy McCarthy on the show to talk about the news of everything that's going on right now with the Trump assassination attempt. Second time, as well as what is taking place with those blowing up pagers on members of Hezbollah. Really, really crazy stuff. In the meantime, we've seen Kamala Harris is taking questions at, correct me if I'm wrong here, gentlemen, but the National Association of Black Journalists.
Yeah, it's a panel.
Panel
in Philadelphia,
and they've been going for a while, but it seems like they're asking questions right now. So yep. We want to listen into the question and answers of what's going on right now. So,
Vice President, black men, as you know, are a closely watched voting bloc. You've hosted black men at your residence.
Yep.
You have engaged black men and centered them in your economic opportunity tour.
Mm-hmm.
But polling shows that some black men, particularly young black men, are considering voting for Donald Trump, and they see him as better for the economy. What is your message to young black male voters who feel left out of this economy, and how can your economic policies materially change their lives?
So I appreciate the spirit of the question, but I'll tell you, I've often been asked this question in a way that I've had to respond by first saying that I think it's very important to not operate from the assumption that black men are in anybody's pocket. Black men are like any other voting group. You gotta earn their vote. So I'm working to earn the vote, not assuming I'm going to have it because I am black, but because the policies and the perspectives I have understands what we must do to recognize the needs of all communities. And I intend to be a president for all people. Specifically as it relates to what we need to do, to your point around economic opportunity. Yes, I started way before I was at the top of the ticket and what I called an economic opportunity tour focused on black men. Understanding that, for example, we have so many entrepreneurs in the community who do not have access to capital, but they've got great ideas, an incredible work ethic, the ambition, the aspiration, the dream, but don't have the relationships necessarily. So my work has included, as vice president, getting billions more dollars into community banks, including working with the big banks to do that, so that we can increase access to capital for our small businesses, for our startups. Part of my plan under my economic opportunity plan going forward is that right now, startup entrepreneurs, small businesses only get a tax deduction of $5,000. Nobody can start a small business with $5,000. So I'm expanding that to $50,000. Understanding, again, that when people have the opportunity to have the resources to get started, they're going to put the good ideas, they're going to put the hard work into it. And part of what I also know is that our young black men, our black men, just like any group of people, anybody, our small businesses are really the backbone of our economy overall. And when they do better economically, we all do better. Part of my work is about understanding what we need to do in dealing with, for example, the historic inequities that have faced the black community around home ownership. Right, I don't have to go through the history with anybody here about what that has meant in terms of redlining, what that has meant in terms of biases and home appraisals, and what that the impact it has had on stemming the opportunity to build intergenerational wealth because of those obstacles. So part of the work that I have done and will continue to do is identify, speak truth about those obstacles, and address them. Another example is medical debt. 1 in 4 black families or individuals is more likely to carry medical debt than others. So part of my perspective, and as vice president, part of the work that we have done is to say that we're going to eliminate medical debt from being on your credit score. Because until now, medical debt worked against your credit score, and you know, people know their credit score like, you know, your weight, right? You know that number. And the difference between what that number is and what it needs to be is the difference between you being able to get a car loan, a small business loan, or even a lease in an apartment. And so part of my approach is understanding the obstacles that traditionally and currently exist to allow anyone, including black men, be able to achieve economic wealth. And I'm going to tell you, I don't think it is sufficient to just only talk about economic policy around reducing unemployment. It is an important marker, and I'm proud of the work that we've done thus far. But it should be a baseline there. Everybody's working. The point is, do people have an opportunity to build wealth? If that's what they choose to do, if that's what they want to do. And a lot of my perspective as we go forward is just that. I believe that there are a lot of opportunities that are available to the American people if we see people and understand what they want for themselves and their families and then meet them where they are.
Wasn't the question that she was asked, why are some black voters supporting Trump?
Yeah, like, what are you going to do?
More or less.
Well, like, but why would black... Did they specify men?
Yeah, they did say men.
Would black men support Donald Trump? And then her first response is that she doesn't look at black people like a monolith and she needs to work to earn their vote. I thought that's a pretty good precursor to a response, and to understand that black people aren't going to just hear you say a few things and be like, I don't know, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. That's what the guy in office right now said. She also talks about helping them build intergenerational wealth. There is nobody who wants to tax your ability to inherit your family's wealth more than the Democratic Party. They want to take it from you. They don't think that you should have the right to have it. But they want to take a small business loan from $5,000 to $50,000? Woo!
I don't know about that accent.
I'm just waiting for someone from the Democrat Party to come out and say, you know, I think black people want to be able to access the ability to pay their bills just like white people. I don't really know that is inherently a different thing, and maybe not delineate the black experience from the white experience completely. Maybe at this event, it's a little different. 2 o'clock hour, coming around the corner. Go vote in the YouTube poll. We'll be right back.